And hello to all you Foxborough faithful, and welcome to another edition of Locked On Patriots, your home for news, notes, analysis, and the occasional opinion on your six-time Super Bowl champion, the New England Patriots. Locked On Patriots, as always, is a part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Mike DeBate, and I cover the Patriots for FullPressCoverage.com, which is where you can always find my written work, and you can also reach out to me on Twitter at MDABATEFPC, and be sure to follow Locked On Patriots on Twitter as well at LO_Patriots. Once again, there is a great show on tap for you today. It's Wednesday. It's hump day. The camel did make its appearance and go, Mike, what day is it, Mike? And yeah, I'm very sick of hearing that, to be totally honest with you, but it's all good. We live for it and we go through it. I'm excited for today's show. My good friend and great, great author, Sean Sweeney, is my guest today, and he joins me from the Boston Sports Journal to talk some Patriots preseason, and as well as the Pat's Gillette Stadium roommate, the New England Revolution. Anyone that knows Sean's work knows that he is the Revs beat writer for the Boston Sports Journal, and in my humble opinion, really is the truly best at what he does. So it will be a great time. But first, we start with the news of the day, and what was thought of as a position of need has morphed into a position of strength. But I'm actually going to tell all you Foxborough and Patriots faithful to pump the brakes just a bit on this. And I am speaking about the wide receiver core for the New England Patriots. And, you know, not more than a few days ago, so many had labeled the Patriots wide receiver core as being thin. And Doug Kite had a great piece in Nesson last night and put it that its prospectus really was based on ifs. If Julian Edelman's thumb heals up, if Josh Gordon is reinstated, if Demaryius Thomas was activated off of the PUP list, then the Patriots would have a stacked wide receiver group. Well, starting on Sunday, those ifs started to become the reality, and it did. Gordon was conditionally reinstated. Edelman was activated off of the NFI on Monday, and then we got news yesterday that Demaryius Thomas had been brought off of the PUP list. So if you look at the Patriots' current wide receiver core, you're looking at a depth chart still headed by Julian Edelman, and I'll get into that in a minute. He's still the number one option here, guys. He's still the most reliable target that Tom Brady has. But you look at the remainder of the depth chart, and now you're starting to go through and take a look at guys like Josh Gordon. N'Keal Harry, obviously, is a first-round draft pick. He's as close to a roster lock as you can possibly get. Demaryius Thomas now is in that mix, guys, with the experience that he brings to the table. Philip Dorsett, you can't necessarily count him out, and I'll go into that in a little bit. Jacoby Myers, really hard to imagine that he's not going to be on the roster this year, and I'll get into that in a minute as well. But then you have guys like Maurice Harris, Braxton Berrios, Gunnar Olszewski, even Damon Patterson and Ryan Davis still round out the depth chart on the wide receiver core for the Patriots. And then you have Cam Meredith, who's right now still on the NFI. So there's a good deal of depth here and a great deal of talent here. Assuming that Gordon does come off of NFI before the season starts, and that's not necessarily a set-in-stone thing here yet, the Patriots do have some very difficult cuts to make. Out of the guys that I mentioned, and I didn't even mention Matthew Slater, who really is a stone-cold lock for this team, but might be penciled in elsewhere this year, and I will get into that in a minute. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself here, but Gordon, Edelman, and Harry are definitely slated in as going to be your stone-cold locks for this roster. Edelman is Edelman. Yes, he's 33, but undeniably he's a reliable target, and he's going to be a very important part of this offense as always. The synergy he has with Tom Brady is second to none, and you have to know that he's going to be the guy that Brady will rely on if he's in trouble. With Slater, his contributions really come primarily on special teams and his leadership, but he's always been counted as a wide receiver, and I think that could change a little bit this year. In the past, Slater has participated in wide receiver drills during training camp. That hasn't been the case this summer, so you have to wonder if maybe they're looking at Slater's contributions as purely a special teamer. I don't think his roster spot is in jeopardy in the least, but you have to wonder if maybe they wouldn't count him toward the six receivers that the Patriots usually employ. So if that's the case, you might be looking at another wide receiver that might have a chance of making the cut. So who's going to make that cut? There's, you know, right now, Jacoby Myers is probably the media darling and the guy that's most likely to fill that roster spot. And look, he is an undrafted wide receiver, but he has played tremendous in the first two preseason games for the Patriots, really been a fixture with the Patriots' first-team offense through most of the summer. It's hard to imagine, again, that he's going to be cut loose given his performance. So I would say, in pencil, definitely put Myers into that slot. Next on the list that's intriguing to me is Demaryius Thomas. And the Patriots don't have much time to work with Thomas. He started the summer on PUP. He very well could end up being a guy that either clicks with this roster or has difficulty. And we've seen guys that have come in that have had difficulty in this system. Eric Decker last year, Reggie Wayne a few years ago, going back a few more years, Joey Galloway. Guys that had enormous amounts of talent but came in and just couldn't seem to hit that synergy with either with Brady or with the Patriots system. So if Thomas does show signs, he's going to need to get acclimated quickly because they're going to need him right off the bat. So that'll be interesting to see, but him coming off of PUP is definitely something to keep an eye on. Dorsett seems to be the fan consensus for the on-man out, but I wouldn't go so fast on that. Dorsett knows the offense. He's entering his third season with the Pats. He's dependable. Tom Brady has completed 76.2% of his targets to Dorsett last season. So there is a good amount of familiarity between these two on the field. Scored two touchdowns in the Patriots playoff run. True, he doesn't have that same upside as a young wide receiver like Myers or a savvy veteran like Thomas, but consistency could be a factor here. And Dorsett really has consistency on his side more than anyone else in the competition level. And that leads me to Josh Gordon. And the Patriots could theoretically keep Josh Gordon on NFI through the first 6 weeks of the season. I know that's not a popular opinion, but it is something that they have at their disposal. Risky, yes, but it could also serve as a trial period for Gordon to prove that he can stay clean. We heard Bill Belichick's press conference. We're going to do what's best for the football team. And if they feel that maybe carrying guys that they can rely on early on and nurse Josh along is the best for the football team, they're going to do it, regardless of whether it sells jerseys or it puts smiles on the face of the fans. This is a team that always does what's best for them. So that's going to be interesting to keep an eye on. If Gordon proves that he can come out right away like gangbusters and make an immediate impact, he will be on the roster because of everyone that's on this depth chart, Gordon has the highest upside when it comes to pure talent. There's no question about it. Bottom line, guys, with the wide receiver core, be optimistic, but somewhat realistic too. Demaryius Thomas has been overcoming an Achilles, and he has shown some signs over the past couple of seasons of statistical decline. Tremendous upside? Absolutely. But a lot needs to happen for him to grow into that potential. The rookies have great promise, but keep in mind, they're rookies, and we need to see production on a regular season stage. After all, Myers is an undrafted free agent. Harry is nursing some injuries. Can't expect expectations to be too lofty on these guys. We need to expect there to be a bend in the learning curve when it comes to Harry and Myers, but ultimately expect a very interesting cutdown for the wide receiver position when the New England Patriots prepare to take the field on September 8th against the Pittsburgh Steelers and open the 2019 season. Now, before I welcome Sean in today, I just want to take a minute to address those of you that have been crushing it at work lately, those of you who are laser-focused on beating that boss level. Well, good for you. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't eat. DoorDash can help you get your next meal from your favorite restaurants in minutes. DoorDash connects you to your favorite restaurants in your city. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be delivered to you wherever you are. There are over 340,000 restaurants in 3,300 cities, so chances are your favorites are on the list, and you might even find a new favorite too. With door-to-door delivery in all 50 states and Canada, order from your local preferences or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, Chick-fil-A, and the Cheesecake Factory. Don't worry about dinner. Let dinner come to you with DoorDash. And right now, our listeners can get $5 off of their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code LOCKEDON. That's $5 off your first order when you download the DoorDash app from the App Store and enter promo code Locked On. Don't forget, that's promo code Locked On for $5 off of your first order from DoorDash. My guest today is a prolific author and among the most knowledgeable sports writers anywhere in the media today. He is the beat writer, as I said before, for the New England Revolution, who just happened to share a home with your New England Patriots. And he does so brilliantly for the Boston Sports Journal. He also covers high school sports for the Sentinel and Enterprise of North Central Massachusetts and is a contributor to the Six States One Pod podcast and the Scholastic Sports Zone in Fitchburg. It is my honor to welcome in Sean Sweeney. Sean, thank you for joining me today on Locked On Patriots.
I'm happy to be here, Mike. And, you know, spot on analysis on those Patriots. I think that, you know, people got to look at Braxton Berrios and what he could potentially contribute to that team. Does he make the cut as a wide receiver or does he play special teams as well? That first game against Detroit, he did mezza. You know, he had some problems in training camp. But you know what? If you need him to contribute on special teams, punt return, like Edelman used to do once upon a time, like Wes Welker once upon a time, you know, save a spot for him.
Exactly. And that's a great point. And, you know, with the prowess that you bring as well, being a great Patriots mind, and a lot of people know you from your work with the Revolution, but the reason, one of the big reasons why I had you on the show this morning is because of the knowledge that you bring with the New England Patriots as well, and you do it just as well as anybody. That, and I also love the mezza reference. That's also great. You know, you're a paisan of mine, and we keep going, and we try to push that narrative as much as we possibly can. But look, I think that's a great
only when I'm eating, I'm a paisan, my friend.
That's all right. You're an honorary member of the club. You're a friend of mine. That's how we say it in here. It's a friend of ours, is a connected guy, but a friend of mine means that you're in there. So you're with me, my friend. But you know, Berrios, that's a great point on him. And special teams is such an important part of this roster. And I know we've seen guys like Nate Epner and Brandon King make the roster year after year after year. And people look at the depth chart and they go, well, who are these guys? I don't hear an awful lot about them. The true fans absolutely know these guys well, but a lot of the periphery fans don't really know these names. And you have to wonder if those spots will continue to be taken. I would say yes, because the Patriots place a great deal of premium on special teamers. So it's going to be interesting. There's a lot.
And Berrios is coming off an injury. So, you know, use some kid gloves with him. If he doesn't make the roster, he should be on practice squad at least.
Yeah, and I think the issue with Berrios right now is there's been a lot of eyes on him. It reminds me very similar to what happened with Austin Carr a couple of years ago, where he really flashed in preseason, and a lot of people had some eyes on him, and they were hoping he might be a guy that might slip to the practice squad. Berrios, I think, has shown enough to be able to be a contributor right away for the NFL. I think he might be a long shot for the practice squad, but at the same time, the Patriots have a way to be able to, you know, maybe nurse this guy along if by any chance he does end up on the practice squad. So it really would be a best of both worlds when it comes to that. But I think Berrios is a guy that probably will be able to make an immediate impact. I don't see him being on the shelf for long, but it's going to be interesting. It will always, always be interesting.
2 more weeks until those final cutdowns are made. And, you know, I can't wait to see what this roster brings to Foxborough this year.
Absolutely. And, you know, that leads me into another question that I've actually been looking forward to asking you as well. And that is the tight end position. And absolutely, we've seen the New England Patriots now weather through the storm, I guess, the PR storm, I guess, of having to deal with the retirement of Rob Gronkowski. And look, I think a lot of people have expectations of Gronk coming back. I've gone on record several times saying I just don't think it's happening this year. Although they do have a good amount of cap space that they're sitting on. Your good friend and mine, Miguel Benzon, was here on Friday, and off the record, we've talked a lot about what's going on with Rob, and you know, he shares my sentiment, but he does see that cap number up there, and he's like, it's interesting to find out what they might do with it. They've brought in some guys that have been journeymen, but guys that can, you know, play the position without question. Matt Lacoste is one of them. Lance Kendricks. You saw them bring in Eric Sauer just a few days ago to try to fill some of these roster positions. it's interesting that they are so stacked at wide receiver, yet so visibly thin at the tight end position. Can you see anybody in the wide receiver slot possibly moving over and playing tight end sets, allowing them to carry more wide receivers and maybe just go with maybe one traditional tight end and have another guy line up in that Gronkowski spot where they're lined up almost as another pass catcher?
You know, I would refrain on answering that only because I don't pay close attention to wide receiver size. And I did not get to get the chance to watch last Saturday's game. Obviously, the Revolution were playing the Red Bulls, and that was my first priority, obviously. And I did read Greg Bedard's recap on Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. My only thought would be, is there someone in the wide receiver core that has the size, not necessarily the speed, but the size to move over from that those wide or that slot area to more closer to the interior line. Is that Demaryius Thomas?
I'm glad you answered that the way you
maybe.
Did.
Maybe. I know that there has been some talk about the size, the height of this wide receiver core now. So I'm wondering if Bill Belichick and the coaching staff are thinking, you know what, maybe? Is this a possibility? You know, obviously, I have no idea. I'm not an insider when it comes to the Patriots. And it's obviously pure speculation on my part. But you know what? It would not be a bad idea to move someone over. I think you hit the nail right on the head right there, Mike.
Yeah, and I think and I'm glad you answered that the way you did, because it does allow me to set that narrative a little bit. The two guys that a lot of people are really kind of looking at right now in terms of size and ability to possibly play those types of sets are Demaryius Thomas and, believe it or not, Josh Gordon. Gordon's body has really gone through a transformation, and I talked a little bit on Monday about his working with Tim Montgomery, the former Olympian that has been training him, and Gordon definitely has that size, and it's almost impossible to think that he'll line up in tight end sets, but it could be a situation where even if that, you know, distinction is not put on his name, that there's a chance that he may line up in some of those packages and be able to get some yards after the catch and make catches the way Gronkowski used to. Gordon has the size. He has the bulk now, it looks like. And, I mean, his speed is definitely a huge, huge part of that. So if he lines up against some of these defensive backs that are not really equipped to handle, that are more equipped to handle a tight end and are not really ready for the burst of speed that he brings, it could create some matchup issues down the line. So we'll keep an eye on that, and I appreciate your candor on that as well, but I also appreciate your opinion, because I think you stumbled onto something there, maybe without knowing it, and that's the brilliance of this man, folks. That's why I had him on this morning. Obviously,
my ego is filling this room right now. Thanks, Mike. You're really doing a number
true
for my morale.
It is, but it's all true. You know, it absolutely is, and I truly mean that. You know, Sean and I are good friends. Anybody that follows us on Twitter sees our interactions, and they know that we can go back and forth with the best of them, but I have so much respect for the coverage that you provide for the Revs, and you do an amazing job. You know, look, the Revs have really turned their fortunes around after a pretty dismal start. They hired Bruce Arena, and they've really, as their head coach, for those of us that don't know, and they've turned their fortunes around some this season. One thing that I do want to put you on the hot seat with, and one thing that I can kind of allow you to, you know, kind of pontificate a little bit on, and one, what do you think has really been the key to that success, independent of just bringing Arena on? And the second that I kind of want you to branch out a little bit on is, do you think the winning culture at Gillette, meaning the success of the New England Patriots, has inspired the Revs in their operations, whether it be through having the same owner with Robert Kraft or just the way they do business, trying to mimic what they see across the locker room with the football Patriots?
You know, it's an interesting question, and I think there's a kind of a very tight answer. There is a massive belief among Revolution fans that Robert and Jonathan Kraft just don't give a damn about the New England Revolution. And I don't think that's necessarily fair. I don't know if it's necessarily true either. And I think that by firing Brad Friedel when they did on May 9th, and to be honest, hanging Michael Burns out to dry the next morning, firing Michael Burns 3 days later, and then bringing in Bruce Arena some 12, 13 hours after the fact, they don't like to lose. And you and I both know that. They do not like losing at all. And for the last few years, the Revolution have been mired in mediocrity. Yes, they got to the MLS Cup final in 2014. That's fantastic. And yeah, they lost that game. Spoiler alert. but you know what? That run coincided with signing Jermaine Jones in August of 2014. And we all know what Jermaine did in the World Cup for the United States national team in 2014. He hit that stunner of a goal against Portugal. And that was the impetus of that run. It caused teams that the Revolution played to try to double down on him, and that freed up Lee Wynn to score goal after goal after goal. So that's, you know, they like to win. And it had been said last year that, you know, they want to win, but you know what? We needed to see that they wanted to win, because we're still waiting for them to replace AJ Soares in the defensive back line. They really did not replace talent with equal with players of equal talent, and that has been a point of consternation for Revolution supporters over this last half decade. And so they bring in Bruce Arena, who, without a doubt, you know, you take away what happened in World Cup qualifying a couple of years ago, he still has one of the most impressive track records in American soccer. Mm-hmm. And to bring him in, and obviously there's the so-called Arena effect, which came along with it, that set them on a run of 11 games unbeaten. And now we're at 13 out of the last 14 in the league unbeaten going into Saturday. So there's that. And if I can ask you to, I don't know if, you know, the Patriots winning has anything to do with it. It's a different game. Yeah, there's 11 people on the field, 22 people on the field, but in some respects, the Crafts have tried to run the Revolution like the New England Patriots. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, with dime counting, I mean, you know, they don't give Danny Amendola their contract that he wanted. So what does he do? He goes to Miami and gets January off for the rest of his career. Mm-hmm. So they've kind of done that sort of with the Revolution, but this year they've opened the purse strings a little. They have two designated players now in Carles Gil, who played for Aston Villa in England, and Deportivo de La Coruña in La Liga, which is now they're now second division in Spain. They also brought in Gustavo Bo, mm-hmm. who wears number 7, who has 4 goals and 6 appearances. They brought him in last month, and he has played for the most part fairly well. This is still his preseason. When you switch from one league that plays from an August to May calendar to a league that plays a March to October calendar, yeah, there's a little bit of, shall we say, an adjustment period. And he has grown into this side over the last 5-6 weeks, and I expect that to continue to grow over the next 2 months leading into the MLS Cup playoffs.
Right. Yeah, and I think that that's those are great, great and interesting points, especially when it comes to the business of the way they do business on the field. And, you know, definitely you bring a great insight when it comes to that. And admittedly, I don't have the knowledge of the Revolution style the way you do by any stretch of the imagination. But there are similar, you know, there definitely are similarities in the way that the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution go about their business. They look to try, or at least this year for the Revolution especially, they're looking to surround their talent with the great minds, the greatest minds possible, and move forward in a position that allows them to be successful, not for just 1 or 2 years in the immediate, but to continue that success long term. And hopefully this is
exactly
the start of something big in for the Revolution.
Exactly. I think there is a little bit of, again, that word consternation with the fans that they didn't really do anything outside of bringing Gustavo Bow during this recent secondary transfer window, when there are still a few areas that need to be fixed, like the defensive back line, like I mentioned with AJ Soares, who left the team for Sweden after the 2014 season and really hasn't been replaced. You know, Bruce has said that, you know, he's not only looking at this year and making a run towards the playoffs and hopefully getting lucky and with lightning striking, but he's also thinking that, you know, this next offseason is where they're going to try to really develop that defense.
Right, absolutely. And then hopefully that will indeed be the case, and we look forward to that, because there is a strong fan base and following for the Revs in Foxborough, and hopefully that will continue. Very quickly, I just wanted to get your take on that. We did open the show about, you know, the co-tenants and the roommates of Gillette Stadium. There've been more than rumors, you know, circulating around for quite a while that the Kraft family might be looking to get a new home for the Revolution within the next couple of years. Really quickly, is there a rumor that you've heard that you are buying into, or where could you possibly see them ending up? Is it closer to the Boston area? Do you think in the area near Foxborough or somewhere else in New England that the Revolution could be playing their home games in the next few years?
You know, it's been a rumor since 2006. So after 13 years of rumors and all that, Revolution fans have basically grown to the point where they don't want to believe anything until they see a blue shovel sticking out of the ground.
Right.
And, you know, we went through this how long ago, 20 years ago, 21 years ago, 22 years ago, with the whole Megaplex issue, and the NIMBYs in Boston didn't want it. Mm-hmm. So, and we've seen it over the last couple of years where they've tried to get into Dorchester at UMass Boston,
mm-hmm.
and they even had renderings for it, which I kind of, when I saw them, I made a noise that really wasn't human. but to know that they were that close, but the monkey wrench of the state legislature got involved and that all went away. I really don't see them being in Boston, and I don't see them being in Providence. Mm. Given what Governor Raimondo mm-hmm. and the legislature has done in regards to the PSOX,
right,
and their whole situation with that stadium for Pawtucket, and that didn't work, and now the PSOX are moving to Worcester,
right,
in a couple of years. So I don't see them forking over money for a stadium in Providence, and they're are a lot of people who say it's Boston or bust.
Mm-hmm.
So basically it's all about Gillette Stadium. And,
right,
and I can tell you exactly why. They have Patriot Place, and I'm sure that they're, that, you know, 17 dates out of Gillette Stadium would put a hurting on the foot traffic into that mall on those 17 dates. And they own the land over on Gillette Stadium. It's already built.
Right.
And yeah, you don't want to take out 17 dates out of your building. That's basically the way it is. What I would like to see done, I would like to see an improvement on the commuter rail line from South Station and Back Bay to Gillette Stadium. I know that they are doing a Monday through Friday pilot program right now, so it does not include revolution dates. I would like to see that happen. I would like to see the state legislature and the city councilors in Boston going to the MBTA and saying, you know what? Yeah, we put the kibosh on this stadium idea, but let's try to brainstorm a way to get our fans in Boston to Foxborough to see the revolution. And that didn't happen after this whole UMass Boston debacle. They said, no, that's it. End of story. They didn't say, you know what, let's explore ways to help the revolution. Because I think that is a killer. You know, there's that platform at Gillette Stadium that is open on 8 Sundays in the fall, and that's pretty much it. So if you can get those fans who rely on public transportation to go everywhere, you know, it's hard to reconcile that this has not been done yet for the good of the Commonwealth.
Absolutely, and I completely agree with you. I really think, I for one really hope they do stay in Foxborough, because I think it is the perfect home for them. Even as a native Rhode Islander, and I can tell you that Paw Sox debacle still hurts people. I'm one of them. That it still bothers that did not come to fruition the way it should have. So I think you make some great points, and I definitely hope to see them remain in New England as well.
The only thing with Gillette is that, you know, the Crafts had a very good heart when they wanted to give the Revolution a nice playing surface with the field turf, but it was in retrospect a little short-sighted because of what came that next year in 2007 with David Beckham and the arrival of European stars, and a lot of European stars do not want to play on turf. It kills careers. And Gustavo Bow came here with turf because he played on turf at Cholos in Liga MX. So if there is going to be a stadium built somewhere, it has to have grass.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think from a football standpoint as well, you know, I can recall when the Patriots had their open practice to the Foxborough residents and the season ticket holders back at the tail end of July, the same night that Rodney Harrison was inducted into the Patriots Hall of Fame. I was in the press room when Bill Belichick came in and addressed the media, and he said, "Oh, it's a soccer field out there," you know, and everybody kind of grimaced and laughed and stuff like that. So you can see the dynamics about how the turf definitely helps, you know, the Patriots, because that's what they play on. And the grass field is definitely what, you know, soccer players definitely, they count on and are a part of and they're most comfortable with. Sean, the half hour just absolutely flies by, man, and I really, really appreciate you coming on today. You made some great points, and I would definitely love to have you back on soon. You know, probably
anytime
season, talk a little more Revs and talk a little more regular season Pats. Before I let you go today, just want to give you an opportunity to let everyone know where they can find you on social media and where they can follow your great work, both for the Revolution and beyond.
Oh, gee whiz. Thank you for the opportunity. And obviously thank you for all the work that you do in bringing Patriots coverage to so many people. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. MR Sean, S-E-A-N, M Sweeney, S-W-E-E-N-E-Y. You can find me on bostonsportsjournal.com, where we cover all 5 Boston sports. Your annual subscription of $35 basically gets me plus 4 other sports for free. Isn't that delightful? And also, you mentioned at the top of the program my books. I do write thrillers and the occasional romance. You can find me at SeanSweeneyAuthor.com.
Excellent. And Sean, once again, thank you so much for joining me today. Always informative and fun when I get to share the mic with you, amigo. And I hope that all of you enjoyed it as well, and I'm sure that you did. As for me, I will be back tomorrow as we take a look at the Patriots preseason game 3 tomorrow night on Thursday as the Patriots hopefully they'll be taking care of the Carolina Panthers at Gillette Stadium, but they'll be taking them on nonetheless. And a special guest will join me to break that down. And trust me, folks, You are not going to want to miss this one. As always, make sure to listen to us each and every day on the Locked On Patriots podcast and subscribe to Locked On Patriots via your favorite podcast provider. Once again, I'm Mike DeBate. I thank you so much for listening today. Have a great day, everybody.